big wheels rolling, big wheels rolling, moving on. Big wheels rolling, gotta keep them going. Big wheels rolling, moving on. The white line is the lifeline to a nation, and men like Will and Sonny make it move. Living like a gypsy, always on the go, doing what they best know how to do. Jamming gears has got to be a fever, 'cause men become addicted to the grind. It takes a special breed to be a truck driving man, and a steady hand to pull that load behind. Big wheels rolling, big wheels.
We're the new breed of trucker. Quiet, fine, polite, and chicken.
Freewheeling Meredith Oaks, Chris, it's Heat on the Road Dog. This is a day we've been waiting for literally for more than 10 and a half years. We started talking about moving on pretty much from the beginning of the program, and listeners called up and said, hey, that's why I got in a truck. And it aired from 1974 to 1976. It's kind of like the Star Trek. The OG Star Trek of trucking. It only ran for a short time, but was wildly influential. Created by two guys named Barry Weitz and Philip D'Antonio. And now it's up online. You can watch it on the internet.
Finally.
Finally.
What took you so long?
Thanks to Mark Rathaus as well, who's here. Barry's here to welcome you guys both.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thanks for joining us. Thank you very much.
What a great show. And for so many years, no one could find it except on like sixth generation VHS tapes that who knows where they came from and were grainy and terrible.
We heard rumors about it existing somewhere, but no one really knew.
Well, anything that you had seen prior to the last couple of years was like a bootleg, and it got pulled off of old TV show, you know, old TVs and
over the air
or grainy 16 millimeter prints that had gone out to the local stations.
And so what was the thought process behind finding this show and bringing it back? Why the interest?
Well, my father-in-law, Phil D'Antoni, has a big name in the industry. He's won an Academy Award.
Well, for what?
For French Connection.
He was one of the producers of the French Connection.
One of the greatest films of the 19... One of the greatest films ever, really. But really, that's one of that captures New York in the 1970s. And this also captures trucking, which we'll talk about later, but continue, please.
And I know we're going to go all over the map here, but so did Sonny and Will, by the way. But that gritty realism seems to have carried that into this show. I mean, it's a very realistic show when you look at it.
Yeah, with the ups and downs. Most people romanticize trucking. This was a real show.
I think Barry will tell you that his concept for the show was to show working truckers, you know, the way life really was for them. He got the idea. Barry, I'll start your story. You can finish it.
Barry, they're not riding around with a chimp, in other words.
No.
Did you think about adding a monkey at any point, or no?
No, the fun of it for me was when we were doing a subsequent feature called The Seven Ups, which I produced and Phil directed.
With Roy Scheider. Seven Ups. I remember The Seven Ups.
Yeah, with Roy Scheider and Tony Lobianco. And we were sitting in the Bronx Terminal Market, which was one of the locations for the feature, and I saw all these trucks coming and going and all the activity of this big food market in New York, and I thought, what an incredible idea for a television series. And
that's where it came from?
The Bronx Market? Who knew?
Yeah, the Bronx Terminal Market, obviously in New York, and we were just, you know, we were sitting there. It was, you know, long hours on location for the feature. And I thought, you know, if I can maybe come up with a couple of characters that would work as truckers and put it in the world of independent truckers, which is what was being used and shipped through that extraordinarily active and vibrant, complex, beautiful environment, the Bronx Terminal Market. I thought, well, maybe I can actually sell this thing. So I came up with a couple of characters, and frankly, Claude Akins came to mind right away. It was he, and then there was a thought of perhaps, you know, Ward Bond, but Ward Bond was long gone. And Converse was an immediate thought because I was a big fan of NYPD. And then I took the show to NBC, the idea at NBC, and they bought it in the room, which you can imagine for a producer or writer-producer is a very exciting experience.
But do you remember
Phil
your...
and I went to...
Barry, do you remember your pitch for the show? Because we always hear about the elevator pitch. Did you have a compact little pitch that NBC leaped at immediately?
No, you know, I think the pitch, in a funny way, was almost what I just said to you right this moment, is that here I'm sitting in the Bronx Terminal Market, and the vibrancy of that, and the immediacy of that, and the entrepreneurial spirit of these guys, these truckers that come and go work incredibly arduous hours, would be a wonderful idea to do as a road show. And when I said that, I forgot who it was. I believe it was Larry White, who was the head of NBC at the time. His eyes lit up. He said, "You guys really want to do a road show? You know what that means." I said, "Yeah, we want to do a road show. We're going to take the show all over the United States." I said, "That's the whole beauty part of this thing, and we're not going to be shooting in a studio."
But here's what you did. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. But I just want to say you did something that was so brilliant and so it may be impossible to do now. You bridged this lifestyle that no other American understands with people who don't understand it but still were interested in it. You can't do that. I mean, people in cities don't understand what drivers do, yet somehow you managed to bridge the gap.
Well, it's very, very kind of you to say, Meredith, but I think when you think of, and maybe, you know, I'm talking a show that's over 40 years old, but when you think in terms of the American spirit and looking backwards, I think you almost have to do that because it's very much changed today, but from my perspective. But when you're thinking in terms of what these guys do, and even mom and pop truckers, which were starting up, what they do and the commitment to do something on their own made them, for me, and I know this may sound perhaps poetic, and maybe I'm being a tad creative, but it made me feel like these were cowboys. These were guys that were out on the range that had to move cattle from X to Y. And they spent months and months doing that. And the commitment to do something like that it was really inspiring to me. And they did it, most of them, with a... let's say, a different degree of education than I had previously had. And I thought, you know, here's a chance for a young man and a woman, to create their own business. And that, to me, is really what I felt was Americana. And then once we started to get into that, then the ideas started to flow with respect to what the episodes would look like.
You know, this morning I watched the episode, The Time of His Life, which is the first episode, but is it also the pilot, or is the pilot different?
No, the pilot is a movie called In Tandem.
In Tandem, right.
Which was a longer format.
Yeah, and will that appear at some point? Will you guys
it will.
Put that up?
We haven't had the opportunity to remaster that yet.
Right.
But it certainly isn't the plan. We're going to remaster that. We're going to try and get DVDs out on it and everything else as well. It's just time-consuming and expensive.
Yeah.
Well, it's really interesting to me that you chose to make Sonny's co-driver a college-educated guy. And it's something that from the minute we got on here, we understood at Freewheeling. And that is that truckers are not monolithic. Drivers do all sorts of things before they come to trucking. Some are educated, some go into the military, some both, some neither. It's just, I love that you added that element of it. And also because drivers are really some of the smartest business people we've ever met, because they have to be. They have to be a driver, an engineer, a psychologist to keep their marriage together.
But the nice thing, too, about the relationship between Sonny and Will is that they play off of each other very well. And Will's almost like this anti-establishment figure. You know, he's more of the guy that's interested in doing the right thing and helping people. And, you know, he's like in this episode I just watched, he kind of had to drag Sonny along with him on it, but eventually Sonny goes. But there's an interesting contrast between the veteran who actually owns the truck and then this young kid
idealistic and
idealistic. Yeah, who's coming
it's
along
a beautiful contrast between different characters, and it helps bring out Sonny's better nature. I mean,
right.
It takes a while to get Sonny, as you said, to go along and help somebody, but once he does, nothing stops him, nothing deters him from doing
that. Well, a commitment, you know, it's funny, and Mark is right on with this, of course, is that I just drove across the country from California to Charlotte, North Carolina, thank you very much,
mm-hmm.
and 40 years ago, 41 years ago, we were doing an episode, in fact, we did two episodes, in Charlotte, North Carolina, Moving On. And I literally drove in almost the day that we were shooting the first of those two episodes. And I thought, in the 6 days that it took us to drive across, I saw truckers and trucks and truck stops and the vitality of this country and the vitality of the trucking industry. And it made me feel, again, and I don't mean to this as an exaggeration, but the rules of the road were so adhered to by these guys, and these are young guys, these are young men owning trucks, perhaps working for companies. But what they do and the helping out of folks that are having a problem on the side of the road was remarkable. It just, I said it to my wife, there was some accident that had occurred, and there was a guy who was in front of us who had nothing whatever to do with the accident, but he just pulled over to be of help, and then we pulled over as well. But he was the one who inspired us to do that.
And this was back then, right?
No, this was just now? This was a week ago.
Oh, okay.
This is
wow.
You know, we're driving across from Los Angeles, from our home in Marina Del Rey, California, to Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, so you're still road tripping.
Yeah, because we get a kick out of it. And the bottom line is, I like the idea of the open road. I like seeing this country in its vastness. It gives me personally a very good spiritual uplift, and I can understand easily. I understood it 40 something years ago when I created the series, how somebody could do this job, how somebody could buy a truck, finance that, and call it his business or her business, and go off every single day to make a dollar. To me, that's an enormous inspiration.
Well, that leads me to a question. I wanted to ask Barry about the things you think have aged well in the show and the things that haven't. Because I have to say, in this first episode, women are sort of like a prize, basically. I mean, does that change over the two seasons? Because I originally watched it when I was 11 or 12 years old, so I don't remember. But do any female truckers show up, or are they always like the girlfriend?
We have them in there. It's very interesting that you say that. Yes, the face of the show changed in a couple of ways, and Mark and I have discussed this at length, and we have that on the Facebook page as well, is that in year one, we were a 9 p.m. show. And when I initially pitched the show to NBC, I wanted it to be a 10 o'clock show because I wanted the edge that you were remarking to in French Connection and then the 7-Ups. That's what we really wanted for the show. But we first got our first year was 9. The second year, when we were shooting on the East Coast, it was an 8 o'clock show. So the fabric of the episodes changed a lot because, again, 8 o'clock was almost like family time, where 9 o'clock you could get into a little more interesting, in my mind, interesting type of topics. So, yes, you do see women. Yes, you do see kind of changes in the environment of the episode.
Right.
Yeah, but Barry, you are seeing heroic women in the show, too. There's, I think, Woman of Steel. Mm-hmm. Is that the one where she's a truck driver as well? And she gets into
a bit of a beef. She's terrific in that.
Yeah.
She's a little bit of a thing. She's a totally little bit of a thing. And when I saw her behind the wheel of the truck, it just made me laugh like crazy.
Which we see a lot.
Okay. But no, but women again, the mom and pop thing was just probably starting in the 70s.
Right.
I don't know, but when I became aware of it, it was, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, husbands and wives. It was fantastic.
So that's Penny Fuller in Woman of Steel, because, you know, we haven't even gotten into the guest stars.
Can you stay with us for a bit longer and talk some more about Moving On?
Yeah.
Mark Rathis is here.
Like, for another 2 hours?
Barry White's here.
By the way, Michael J.
I'm
Pollard.
I'm sitting in Charlotte, North Carolina, where it's 95 degrees. I'm happy to be inside.
Yeah, it's okay, kind of hot here, too, this morning. I want to play this scene from the time of his life with Michael J. Pollard, the first episode, where they're in a bowling alley and a fight breaks out. So here's a little audio from Moving On, and when we return, Barry and Mark will take us behind the scenes once again of the program.
I'm Irvin.
You said your mother was sick.
She suddenly got to feeling better.
Well, then there's no reason we can't have our date.
Hey, wait a minute, mister. She don't want to go, she don't have to go.
Gentlemen, take it easy.
Take it easy. I could take that punk and the two punks with me.
Come on, Shannon. We don't want to fight.
What's the matter? Is he afraid?
Well, I don't know about him, but I am. I never like fights. It's not just because of his slip disc. Neither of us likes to fight.
Well, he's so big and strong. I think it's time for us to run away. Gentlemen, I'm sure we can talk this over and then.
Hey, lay off, guys. Take it easy. You don't want to hurt anybody.
Now, come on, fellas. Why make trouble?
Watch it. Now, back off, will you?
We're the new breed of trucker. Quiet, refined, polite,
and chicken.
Hey, it's the cops. Get
out of here. Let's get out of here. Let's go.
Hey, guys.
I've never been a coward before in my life, and I love it.
That calls for more champagne.
Big wheels rolling, big wheels rolling, moving on. Big wheels rolling, gotta keep them going. Big wheels rolling, moving on.
The white man is a lifeline to a nation.
Talking about one of our favorite subjects here on Freewheeling, the show Moving On, which is on the internet. We'll tell you how to access it in a little bit. Mark Rathis is here, and Barry White, who is one of the original creative producers. You were the executive producer and the creator of the series, right? And Phil D'Antoni was one of the producers. Is that how things went, Barry?
That's correct.
One of the things that we're sitting here thinking about, and this is really fascinating to us, because we hear from listeners all the time who say, you know, the 70s, 60s and 70s, golden age trucking, the public looked up to us. We were heroes.
Knights of the highway.
Right. And now it's not like that. And did Moving On, which came first, you know, the chicken or the egg, the movie, the TV shows that portrayed truckers in this positive light, or the drivers who were just looked up to? I mean, it's hard to know, like, which happened first in the popular culture.
Well, in my estimation, it's always the character that creates the world. It's not the world that creates the character. So if you look at these types of people that became truckers, if you sit in a room with any of them and don't get inspired by the possibilities that there is a series or a movie or a feature film about these kinds of folks, then you're made out of wood. It's the same thing. Many years ago, I developed a series that was involved with NASA, with astronauts. And if you sit with astronauts and don't get the stimulation from them of what they do and the uniqueness of it, then again, it's like sitting with truckers.
But
if you don't get that sense of it, then right, there's nothing there.
But to my memory, Moving On was ahead of the trend, because from what I recall, the trucking movies and the CB craze, that all crested after Moving On. So do you think you were sort of the first to get trucking into the mainstream, American mainstream?
Well, they say that. I mean, Time magazine at the time said that we created the CB craze. In fact, I think they gave me credit for creating the CB craze. I don't believe I did that, but...
Did Midland or any other CB manufacturer send you a check at some point?
Well, even C.W. McCall, yeah, I think, was 76, right?
I wish they would. In fact, I'd like to have a Kenworth truck, thank you very much. But
ooh,
the bottom line is, Yeah, ooh, is there a chance?
Mark was just telling us during the break that Kenworth took the truck back. They basically said, now that you're done with it, we'll take it back. Thank you.
Yeah.
By the way, you're very near the truck, Barry. There's a truck show this weekend in North Carolina where the Moving On truck is going to be displayed.
Well, there is a truck for sale, a new Kenworth, at Truckworks in Birmingham, Alabama. And there is the original that sort of floats around. Mark and I have been trying to put our hands on it. But I have no idea where it is. The guy who moves it around, I've never spoken with, don't know who he is.
Well, we know where it is.
Yeah, we know exactly where it is.
We just had a caller and tell us where it is.
You're just a few miles away from it in North Carolina.
It's... Well, I why don't you, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, we'll pass it on to Mark.
You know,
you have to go down there.
Some of those because I would like nothing more than just walking up and wondering where that truck came from.
Did the truck have a name, by the way? Because I know the Blue Mule was that one from White Line Fever, but did the Moving On truck have a name, or did you just call it the 925?
The Big Green Truck.
What Sonny did, Sonny called what his handle was Sundance. So it may have taken that. It may have taken that name, but the Pruitt name on the side of the door really became the whole background for Do It Like Pruitt. It's so funny because some years ago I was hiking the Appalachian Trail and there was two young guys in front of me and one guy was stressing getting up the hill and the other guy says to him, "Come on, Jack, do it like Pruitt." And I thought, how do I tell him? I say to him that those words were mine?
Did you tell
him?
But
I couldn't. I walked up to him and I said, "Do you have any idea where that came from?" He said, no, I'm my uncle, my father, he's somebody older, had said, he said that to me all the time. I said, "That's cool, that's great, I really like that."
Man, I wonder why Kenworth doesn't remake the truck. People are so hungry.
No, they were just saying they have.
Yeah, well,
Barry
just mentioned it. Yeah. There's a dealership.
In Alabama?
Called Truckworks, mm-hmm. Spelled W-O-R-X. And they've done a replica truck with our approval. Mm. And they've got the same paint scheme. And they have, it says Moving On the exhaust heat shield.
Right, nice.
And so if you want a replica of the truck, go down to Truckworks and pick one up.
Tell them, give me the Moving On truck.
Exactly.
Hey, will you guys take a phone call from one of our road dogs?
Yeah.
It's Onion calling in. Say hello to Mark and Barry.
Hey, guys. I really appreciate the work you guys are doing and have done. I love the show. I can't get enough of it. The matter of fact, I named my business, I guess technically it's after the song, Moving On, but there's a line in it that says the white line is the lifeline of the nation. And so therefore I named my business Lifeline Carrier. And so so you guys had a handle in that.
That's great.
Yeah,
send the man a T-shirt.
Oh, send him a T-shirt.
Oh, cool. Okay.
We just played the David Allan Coe version of that, but Merle Haggard wrote Moving On, who we lost this year. Mm-hmm. I wish Merle had been here to see the revival of Moving On.
Yeah.
That would have been something, right?
Well, let's talk about the revival, because, Mark, I have a feeling you had a little something to do with getting it online. What were the machinations of that?
Well, when I first realized that it was a show that was outright owned by Barry and Phil, as opposed to being owned by a network or
Universal
studio,
or somebody,
I said, how come we're not doing something with it? And I didn't really know Barry at the time, so I heard this from Phil. And he said, well, go ahead, do something. And so I tracked down all the original elements and got them from the Fox Vaults and found someone to help me finance the remastering. And went through all 44 episodes, remastered them, cleaned them up, did some fixes on the color.
What were your thoughts as you were watching these?
I wasn't really watching them at that time because it was just like I'm looking at the visuals.
Right.
And what I do recall realizing was that there's a lot of big name actors in this. And
Elisha Cook Jr. is in the first episode.
It's
along
amazing.
With Michael
it's
J.
amazing.
Pollard.
You mentioned Michael J. Pollard, and there was a wonderful combination of older Hollywood legends like Janet Leigh was in an episode.
Shereen North.
And Patricia Neal was in an episode. Sherry North was in an episode. And then there were also the young up-and-coming guys who were going to become big stars. John Ritter was in an episode. Jeff Conaway was in two episodes.
Michael Parks, and I was going to ask you guys Michael about Parks. Then Came Bronson, because I was a big Then Came Bronson fan. You know, which was...
You'll get a kick out of this.
Yes.
You'll get a kick out of this. I have to tell you. Between George Maharis, who was in one of the episodes, who did, as you know, Route 66, and Michael Parks, these guys insisted when we met them initially for the casting that their shows were superior to ours. until they got on our set. And when they saw what our guys were capable of doing with Kenworths, they would have been done with a motorcycle.
And a Corvette.
Motorcycle, and a Corvette. Their eyes rolled. They couldn't believe it. Their
mouths Barry, you went all over the country to shoot this, and that was fairly unusual at the time, wasn't it? It's unusual even now.
Yes. What Phil and I decided to do, again, owning it independently, and I heard the name Universal uttered, but at one moment Universal had said to us, are you sure you don't want to sell this to us? And we said, no, we're going to take this on. We're going to try to do this as an independent, which meant we were totally responsible for any deficits.
You're like Sonny and Will.
Exactly.
Yes. And that is, and you're absolutely right on the money, Irv. It was, let's do this. If there's a way to do this, there should be a way for the entrepreneur, the independent, if you were, the independent film company, as small as we were, to actually survive in this world. And we did. And we took on the challenge, and we just did it. And as I said, the first year was the West Coast, and the second year was the East Coast.
Well, the irony, of course, now is Hulu is owned by Universal, is it not? I mean, so now that's it's being
correct.
Distributed
well, everything
by
comes
Universal.
Back around.
Yeah. So that's
it all
great.
Comes back
that's
around.
Yes.
You can blame Mark for that, because he's totally responsible for all of these post-production and beautiful... by the way, I want to say this to him and give him a knee on this. I am a bear when it comes to this. And when the film looks great, I love it. When the film doesn't look great, it really gets my ardor up. When you look at this show on Hulu, you will get the sense that this was a network show, not that it was in any way redone, reproduced this or that.
Right.
It is that quality of work. And that's Mark. That's all Mark.
It looks
I had
beautiful.
Nothing whatever to do with it.
It looks
thank
beautiful.
You.
And especially since we've been watching it on grainy sixth generation VHS tapes until now.
Yeah. Well, you also have to give props to the production crew.
And the cinematographer.
The camera, cinematographer. Yeah. For a 40-year-old 60mm film negative to look this good with just a little bit of remastering. I mean, we didn't do it.
It's also, the time capsule aspect of it is fascinating. It's 1974 America, you know, which is obviously gone. I don't need to say that, but it's obviously the country doesn't look like that anymore.
Well, we have a super fan, Bill Bazin, who also is opening a museum, by the way.
Whereabouts?
In Wake Forest, North Carolina, which will be open later this month. And he's got all kinds of... souvenirs and photos and signed things, and he's got the toys that were issued in the day, and he's also done a lot of research on locations, and he's got a historian's Facebook page that's kind of a sister page to ours, and he's found all the locations, and he's got, you know, Google Maps, Street View. You know,
so are there then and now photos?
Oh, wow.
Then and now, but there's a lot of places that are still around.
Right.
And it's really fascinating how he's managed to kind of get in there and find these things. And he is in touch with people, locals from the areas where the show was shot. He hears stories from people. He gets pictures sent to him from people who are, you know, taking pictures with their Instamatics, you know.
Probably Polaroids.
Yeah,
and they could be extras. You know, we came into a town, Chris Meredith, we came into a town, and we would just do a sweep of extras
And it was remarkable, some of the people we came up with. Mark continues to tickle me about one in particular episode. I forgot the name of the episode, where there was a young kid that kept coming into the office wanting to be cast for a role. It was a minor, nothing role. And it was a role of a cop, actually a state trooper, that pulls our guys over. And I said, well, what are we making such a big deal about this? You know, well, no, let's do, we'll cast, don't worry about it. And this guy kept coming back. And we finally cast him. And he was very nice in the role, and it was Samuel Jackson.
Oh, wow.
You don't say. Oh, my
God.
We do say.
Was it generally?
And the bottom line is, and he made himself a total pain, so that we finally, in fact, those roles were not even cast by the director or me. They were always cast by the first AD because the roles were so minor that we never, you know, okay, you want this guy, you want that guy, you want that person. Okay,
well,
fine, go,
like his
go,
wallet
go.
Says, he is a bad mother trucker. So, you know.
You got it. You got
right.
it. What's in your wallet?
Yes.
What's in his wallet?
What's yes. in your wallet?
That was the first piece of work he did was on Moving On. And the role is so tiny and goes by so fast. That you'd have to. Anyway, we were great fortune. With,
Barry, can you stay there? We got a break again.
Yeah, but we'd love to talk some more with you guys.
But we got more calls too, and
yeah, lots of people want to talk to you as well. This Road Dogg Truck and Weather Update is brought to you by Speedco.
It's all about moving on.
Big wheels rolling, moving on. Big wheels rolling, moving on. Big wheels rolling, gotta keep them going. Big wheels rolling, moving on. The white line is the lifeline to a nation, and men like Will and Sonny make it move. Living like a gypsy.
Freewheeling, Meredith Oakes, Chris T on the Road Dogg, talking Moving On, your favorite TV show, drivers, because it's back. It's on the internet. You can access it, and we'll tell you how in just a little bit. We have Barry White and Mark Rappas here, two of the gentlemen responsible for both putting it on in the first place and bringing it back in the 21st century. And Barry, you were talking about Samuel L. Jackson hustling to get on the show, and a lot of the cameos of these people who were famous or would become famous. How did you get these people? Were they eager? Were they into the concept? Or was it hard to attract people to get on the show?
Well, it's interesting because you were mentioning earlier about Michael J. Pollard and Elisha Cook, and basically it's our premiere episode of our first year. And I had, years before I became a producer, I was an agent, and I was on the set of Bonnie and Clyde, and I had seen Michael J. Pollard. And when the first script came in, I thought, what a wonderful chance to use this magnificent actor that is very, very, very special. And we put together, again, Michael J. Pollard and Elisha Cook, and that episode is stunning in the relationship of father and son. It is a beautiful episode to watch. Again, it's in the 9 o'clock time frame. So there's some very subtle, beautiful things that are manifest in that episode that I don't think we were able to reach for in the second year when we were on at 8 o'clock. But once they saw the script, and if everything goes to the script, and everything goes to the fact that we were trying to do something that was unique for its time era, so that actors like Michael Pollard, Elijah Cook, Gary Merrill, Patricia Neal, for that matter. When Patricia Neal walked in my office, she did the episode called Prosperity Number One. She was just magnificent. She had been an Academy Award winner. She had read the script, which is a woman who runs or owns a coal mine. And she's so elegant and so magnificent that after we're talking for about a half hour or something like that, she says, I want to do this, Barry. I said, do you think you can play a woman who runs a coal mine? And she stood up and she leaned over the desk and said, honey, my pop used to manage a coal mine in Kentucky. I said, done, cast her. That's
nice.
The end of that. And she had a stroke, and here's a beauty part of what this actress was. Again, Academy Award winner for HUD. She had a stroke. She had a slight limp, and she had a cane. And I said, oh, boy, all right, we're doing it. We're doing it. So I got a call from location, and then I went out to see her. And the reason I went out to see her is she wanted to have a big Doberman pincher that she would walk through the coal mine in that world with. And it was up over rough and tumble ground. And she said, honey, I can do this. Don't worry about me. I can handle this. I said, okay, Mrs. Neal, there you go. And she was so spectacular in that episode that people would call me and say, I didn't know that she was still working. I didn't know. Look how fantastic.
You know, she's in the opening of our show from Face in the Crowd.
Right.
There's several Patricia Neal sound bites in the opening of our program.
I mean, when you think about her, and that's what you were saying earlier, I think Mark said it, and Mark is right on when he says it, the show attracted great, great creative people to it. One, because it was a good idea, and two, I think because they were open to the challenge of doing something that was not being done in the 70s on network television.
It really, to me, Moving On is in the fabric of that independent film spirit of the 70s. You know, that book Easy Riders and Raging Bulls, the whole idea of, you know, you could really have a lot of creative control over what you did. And because, I mean, especially this first episode, I was saying earlier, it's kind of downbeat. It's not this happy ending sort of thing. I mean, it is ultimately uplifting. But was that difficult? Was that a difficult sale for you with NBC? And is that why you're saying in the second season, not only the time shift, but the feeling of the episode started to change a bit?
I think so. I think, yes, I think you're correct. And I think they wanted it to be a little more light, a little more breezy.
That's escapist.
When you look at, and I think they wanted to go for a broader audience. And again, it's always, in television, I find, it's always a matter of what the competition is. So they were looking to do different things at NBC. We were a very small independent company, different than, as you said, Columbia Pictures Television or Universal or Warner's or any of them. So they could kind of move us around at will. But we were getting enormous ratings, and those ratings aren't even possible in today's terms. But they still wanted to move us, and we were moved. And therefore, the show had to lighten up. There are some very interesting, look, Mackenzie Phillips is in one of the episodes, and there is a way of handling that episode from a story standpoint that we did in year one. We could never have done that in year two.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask me which show would I rather have done, I constantly say it. I say it on Facebook, and Mark and I talk about this frequently. I would prefer the 9 o'clock hour if we could have stayed there. And had we been able to stay there, I'd like to believe that we would have gone on for much more than 2 years.
Well, can you guys stay here for just one more segment, and we'll take some phone calls and talk some more about Moving On?
Sure.
You've got me. Mark, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Oh, we got him duct taped to the chair. He's not going anywhere.
Before I play Merle Haggard yet again, Barry, is there anything you want to tell us about getting him involved in this and the ideas?
Yes, I do. I do want to, because you keep using the theme, thank you, as a bumper, and I would love to talk about it. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So when
are you ready for me to go now? Or
want to do it now? We've got a few minutes, sure.
Okay. I had, before I ever became a producer, I was a one-nighter agent, and I booked a lot of musical acts, and I knew about Merle Haggard and the Bakersfield Sound. So once we had this series up and running, I said, let's try to see if he will do the theme song. And I called him up in Bakersfield, and we were at the offices of MGM at the time, and he said, why don't you come up and we'll sit and we'll talk about it. I said, that's cool, let's do that. So I went up, and he said, bring your fishing rods with you, Barry. You bastard. I said, I do bass fish a little bit, Merle. He said, well, why don't you come up? So I didn't say to him that I used to fish bass fishing, tournament fishing. I love bass fishing.
Ooh.
So I got there with my fishing rods, yes. I got there with my fishing rods, and he said, come on, let's go out in the bass boat. So went out in the bass boat, and I'm catching fish left, right, and center. And he's standing there singing Okie from Muskogee. And I thought, no, Barry, stop. This is not the way you handle this kind of a star. So just kill the speed and let the speed go to the star. Let him start catching fish. And he does. And now he's pulling fish in like they're jumping into the boat. And he's happy, and I'm happy. And he said, I'm going to come down. I want to see the pilot. I said, please do. Came down. He brought his crew from Bakersfield. And they sat in the screen room. I was nervous as heck that they would be happy with what they saw. Our film editors brought in all kinds of refreshments. And they sat there, and they liked it. They laughed at the right places. They oohed and aahed at the right spot. The pilot is particularly good. And then we walked into the MGM commissary. Now, the MGM commissary had historically some of the biggest stars that were ever in the film business that used to go to that commissary. And when we walked in, Merle Haggard and his crew, the people saw him, and they started to applaud.
Wow.
And that was his reception. We didn't plan it. I had no idea that it was going to happen. But all of a sudden, people kept saying, Oh, that's Merle Haggard. And then the applause sort of went right through the commissary. And then he said, he'll do it. He called, and we made a deal, and end the story. And then the rest is history. He came out with an album. It came number one.
Number one hit in July of 75. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
And if you hadn't pulled your punches in terms of catching bass,
no!
It might have been Paul Anka doing the damn theme song. Right?
Good. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? It could have been Johnny Cash too. You know, I mean, let's give me a break.
That would have been pretty.
You
good.
Know, could that he would have had the right voice, wouldn't he?
Yeah, sure,
absolutely.
Yeah. Stay right there, Barry. We're going to return with more tales of moving on.
Freewheeling, Meredith Oakes, Chris T, talking Moving On with
Gerald,
two of the guys.
President Gerald Ford's favorite TV show.
No, seriously?
Yes.
I believe it. Although he couldn't chew gum and watch it at the same time, I'm told. Barry Weitz and Mark Rathis are here, and let's talk to some of the road dogs. Brian is in Kansas. Hey, Brian.
Hi. Kind of nice to get to talk to y'all. It's been exciting listening to everything that y'all have going on. And I was kind of curious. There's a rumor on the internet about the W925 that they was made, you know, up to 74. But then you guys inspired the W900 because there wasn't enough room in the W925 for the camera crew. Is that correct?
I can't honestly answer that.
It's
hard for me to give you anything. My whole thrust with the show was more on the creative end than placing the cameras where they had to be. So I can't give you a good answer. I know you want a good answer, and I'm sorry that I'm not able to give it to you.
Just tell them yes. It was Beefy Teamsters. That's the reason why.
Well, they obviously needed it.
I can tell you that it was crammed in that sleeper. Tell you that. It was crammed in that sleeper, and we used to have tons of fun trying to get Claude in that sleeper and Frank in that sleeper, and then try to get Claude and Frank in that sleeper together, of course, was a joke.
I know we don't need to point this out, but both of those guys got their CDLs, right? I mean, they both learned to drive, many of the shots are them driving, aren't they?
Yes, but the answer to that is Claude took to it like a fish to water, and Frank, not so much.
Oh, okay.
That sounds about right. Bob's in Iowa. Yeah. Say hello to Barry Weitz and Mark Rathis from the Moving On.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite shows many, many years ago. I've been on the road for 50 years or better, and I'd really love that show. I had a question. I heard once that the last five episodes they did that maybe were not aired was in a five-star general. Was there anything to that?
No, sir. We aired every episode we made, and from an efficiency standpoint, we shot every script that was written.
There was one show that
yes,
called The Strongest.
Mark found it.
The Strongest
exactly
Men
right.
in America, where Sonny brags that truckers are the toughest men in America.
Oh, and then the Marines take them up.
And the Marines take them up, and they challenge the guys to a couple of weeks on a training base. And is that the, Barry, is that the one where they have Joe Frazier boxing with,
yes.
with Converse?
Yes.
It's got Rosie Greer in it,
yes.
too, that episode.
Yes.
Yeah, Rosie Greer's in that. But I was shocked when I saw Joe Frazier.
Smoking Joe.
And I think they Frank got
well,
on his horse.
Well, you found another one. You found one about the crop duster that we were playing with that never got shot.
That was never shot.
But
yeah.
That was one that was just, we were just playing around with it. We never actually finished it. But beyond that, everything that was ever written was shot.
And it's up on TV.
Very
and
rare.
Up on the web. And how do you access it?
We've got a website. It's called movingontvshow.com. And then we also have a Facebook page. And that's facebook.com/movingontvshow.
I think we're out of road, man.
What a pleasure.
It's been fascinating.
Yeah, come back
and
anytime.
Please come back, because
okay,
I got so many more questions. We have so many more questions. It's not even
anytime.
Funny. There you go.
Anytime.
Moving on TVshow.com.
Thanks,
and
guys.
On Hulu. And we also put a link up to the Pro TV, whatever it's called. Pro Classic TV. There you go. We'll be back. Big wheels rolling.